Alright guys, welcome back to episode 2 or 02 or 002, however many places that you want to hold open for however many shows we're going to have of the Marvel Bronze Age season 2, if you want to call
season
it
season 2. Absolutely, the comeback.
All these qualifiers on it.
Don't call it a comeback. We never left.
Don't call it a comeback. I'm Ed.
I'm Levi.
And to let you guys know, even though most of the books, well, no, all of the books we're going to be talking about are pretty much 40-plus years old.
All of them.
We will be talking about story and what goes on and everything. Most people would kind of call that spoilers, but I just don't know if that really qualifies for books that are 40 years old, if you can really call anything a spoiler. I mean,
it's like, dude, I was just going to get around to reading that.
Yeah,
you
really
ruined it for me.
That was on the top of my stack for this weekend.
I know. It's like that was in my queue.
Yeah. So anyways, guys, there you go. If you want to consider 40 years spoilers, whatever, you know, I'm sure somebody has done it before us. Talked about one of these books or something, you know. So
wait, Casablanca ended how? Damn, I was going to watch that tomorrow.
There you go. We're going to talk about Don Quixote and everything that happens in the story. Spoilers.
War of Roses, what?
Our two books this episode are the... I have it as the first volume. It may be the second volume, but anyway, Silver Surfer, issue 13 that came out in 1970, whichever volume that turns out to be.
Mm-hmm.
And Submariner, again, whichever volume that turns out to be, issue 22.
Yep.
Both... 1970, I think those were what, February?
Yes.
Roughly February,
yeah.
1970. So the first one we have on tap is the aforementioned Silver Surfer.
Swoosh.
This was, it's my understanding, this was one of Stan Lee's more... maybe not favorite characters, but Stan Lee always had an affinity. He tried several different times to give the Silver Surfer his own book and keep it going, this being one of those times. I think Silver Surfer first appeared in Fantastic Four as the Herald of Galactus. Mm. If he appeared during Stan's run, then Stan Lee and perhaps Jack Kirby were responsible for his ultimate creation, which I didn't check to see for sure, but I believe I knew that Stan Lee was. I'm not sure 100% if it was Jack Kirby or another artist. Don Heck comes to mind for some reason, but I'm not sure why. So anyways, the cover here, Sky Rider of the Spaceways, the Silver Surfer, is the tagline, and the title of the story, or perhaps subtitle, is The Dawn of the Doomsday Man. We have a robot-y or a dude in a big suit of armor kind of rising up of a smoking pit. Looks like it's in the street of a city with Silver Surfer on his cosmic surfboard zooming through the sky down the street at this Doomsday Man, which, assuming that's him, since that's what they say on the cover.
And with such an intent look on his face, Silver Surfer.
He is after something. Yes.
Very much.
Yes.
So.
Pretty as covers go, it's a pretty dynamic cover. I thought a lot of movement. You can see the smoke streaming up. The surfboard is zooming such that it's knocking some people's hats off and everything. So there's a lot of energy, I think, on the cover of this book. It's not just a static picture.
No, you've got like you said, the motion, you've got the flags, you've got the people, you've got so many different levels of people too. I mean, you've got the street people, and then apparently, well, no, maybe not, I can't tell, maybe there are windows, but in the different floors of the buildings, you know, there are people, of course, watching what's going on down the street.
Right, yeah, so apparently something's been happening long enough for people to have gathered to look out the windows.
Right, exactly.
So either this is an ongoing fight, or there's been some loud disturbance by the Doomsday Man doing something. So, but yeah, everybody in the vicinity is alerted and is watching as Silver Surfer bears down on him.
Maybe they've just seen the Robody before.
It could be. This I don't believe I've ever said it before, so it's very possible that nobody's ever seen it. So, not that there's any connection necessarily between them.
Right.
All right, we have Stan Lee and John Buscema as the writer-artist, Dan Adkins as the inker, and Sam Rosen as the letterer. The story opens with Silver Surfer. I would call it incognito.
As much as he can be, yes.
Well, yeah, he's in a, let's see, he's got shoes and trousers, he's got an overcoat, he's got gloves and a hat on, and sunglasses.
And possibly even a scarf or kerchief.
Yeah, you're right. Maybe he's got an ascot.
An ascot. Back in the day, it would have been an ascot.
There you go. That's right. He's been watching Scooby and the gang trying to fit in.
Yes. And I must say, that is a lovely ascot he's got.
Yes. Leaning against a... It's a column. It's part of the wall of the building. On one side, it looks to open up, or to maybe not open up. It's a big window to a diner. And on the other side is a in-building newsstand.
Yeah, it looks like an open-air newsstand.
Yeah, that is open to the outside, but it's not one of those that is like sitting outside. It appears to be... well, you can't really tell. It looks lighted and everything, so I'm not sure... It could be that's around the corner, and it could be outdoor.
Yeah, I was just going to say, it could be the corner. But you've got the step up there. I'm voting that it's just an open-air, walk-in, newsstand, magazine stand sort of place.
Yeah, I miss those. I remember seeing a couple when we lived in Chicago, which was a little PL there, but... It was it had a completely different feel than standing in Walmart or Kroger perusing a magazine aisle.
Right.
Very, very different feel to it because it was outdoors.
Right. There's that enhanced sense of danger.
Yes. Yeah, like you're up to something.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So the Silver Surfer is reading this paper, and he thinks to himself, the world may soon have need of the Surfer's power cosmic.
Power cosmic.
On the back of his paper and another copy that someone here next to him has, you see the headline, World Shocked.
Okay. I wasn't able to make out that second word for the entire time, man. I was like, world what?
Yeah, shocked. And you've got somebody here at the diner counter reading it with the short order cook kind of looking over the paper at it, too. People at the newsstand are talking. If it isn't a hoax, it could be the greatest threat ever to face mankind. It ain't possible. How can they let something like this happen? So, obviously, the news is fairly dire, or so it would seem. I mean, not that people who read the printed word aren't apt to put on.
Well, it's either that or it's a celebrity wedding again.
It could be. Kanye before Kanye.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It was. Next, just out of the blue, we see, well, actually, he is near a subway stand because the Silver Surfer starts dropping down into the subway, going past the change booth here, and he encounters the turnstile. Yes. Or turnstile, however you say it. And of course, it stops because Silver Surfer didn't feed it, you know, whatever, a credit card or a token or a ticket. I've heard of those that you feed a ticket into a slot. So he didn't do anything, tried to go through the turnstile, and it stopped him. And he quickly just reached over and kind of just zapped the machinery with the power cosmic.
Oh, no. No. You missed the best part of what he did. He gave it a cosmic thrust.
Oh, okay. Yes, he did. And they even went so far as to give us kind of a cutout of the machinery to show us what he was doing.
Mm-hmm. So you know that he's getting in there and getting it good.
Yep. As the power cosmic is wont to do.
Yes, it is, because it is cosmic.
The ticket seller notices that he really didn't do anything, but then thinks to himself, well, no, I won't say anything. I'm old. They're not going to believe me anyways.
I want to lose my job, man.
Yeah, I'm not really sure why that's in there, but okay. So Silver Surfer jumps on the subway, sits down to a dude who is very light complected to me mm-hmm. to have the size afro mm-hmm. that he has.
Yep.
He does have facial hair. He's got one of the big droopy all the way down to the bottom of the jawline mustaches.
Oh, yeah.
Goes all the way down. And looks like maybe some mad sideburns almost coming close to the end of that mustache, too.
Yep.
Kind of sideburn. So,
and looks like he's wearing a fur vest.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. Looks like very 70s kind of attire.
I bet it's alpaca.
So it could be. I hear in 1970 alpaca was big.
It was. That's where the money was at.
Wow. So the Silver Surfer sits down next to this dude on the subway, and he asks him, hey, does this go to the United Nations? And the, let's see, the guy kind of, can't you speak English? I guess Silver Surfer must have an accent.
No.
Oh, it was or he uses the word conveyance.
Yes, this underground conveyance transport.
Yeah, so the guy's like, huh? And then he notices that the Silver Surfer looks a little funky and actually gets up and leaves him saying, you know, why do the kooks always sit next to me on the subway?
You got to be kidding me with that corny white skin bit, man.
Yeah, if only he knew.
Yeah, right?
and something else. We see him riding his surfboard later in the story. Right?
Yes.
Why is he not doing it here?
Well, I took it to mean that he was, one, trying to fit in, but also, two, trying to do the human experience.
Okay.
I mean, because I'd be possible. Surfing all the time.
Because if I recall correctly, at this time in his career, he had been, because he had not done what Galactus had wanted him to do. Galactus had released him from his servitude of being his herald.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, he banished Silver Surfer
to Earth. He trapped him there.
Right, yeah. He punished him by saying, you know, you love Earth so much, here. Boom, and he can't. I think he can't like leave Earth's atmosphere.
No,
he runs into like an energy barrier or something like that. And so yeah, I guess he's like kind of resigned himself to the fact. Well, you know, I'm here, so I need to whatever.
Yeah,
you know, try to fit in or try to learn or you know any number of things. So okay, as he's sitting here riding the train, we see the paper finally. And the big headline says, UN calls emergency session underneath, nations attend to discuss threat of doomsday man. And then in the next panel, we see the reverse of the paper where it does indeed say world shocked. And he's really reading the Daily Bugle for Marvel fans out there. We all know who works at the Daily Bugle at this point. Well, who freelances with the Daily Bugle, I should say. And reading the story puts Silver Surfer in mind of something that he encountered previously.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he says maybe he says recently or something. He just says not too long ago.
Yeah.
So to someone wielding the power cosmic that's been surfing the spaceways for Galactus, it's hard to say what not too long ago means.
Right. For him, it could have been 5 years.
Or back in the 40s.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I mean, so I suspect it wasn't because what he encounters looks much more modern than older. So this must have been like, you know, within the past month as I was cruising around kind of thing.
Because
he says he noticed an island with a lot of military warships. And as he kind of investigated or as he was approaching the island, he was attacked via rockets, seemingly from those responsible for the ships in some way. If not directly from the ships, then those people who were in control of the ships were also on the island and mm-hmm. the rocket was launched from the island.
Yep.
But either way, from the vicinity of all this, he was attacked by rockets, slipped him on his surfboard doing some fancy flying there, circled back around, coming in low to defy their primitive radar.
Yes.
That's what that, so.
Yeah.
So he's buzzing in low, gets to the island to look around, starts seeing some military gear. We recognize them as military. I don't know if he knows enough to realize that these are military vehicles and soldiers and whatnot.
Well, I mean, if you read enough of him, he's a pretty smart, or he thinks he's a pretty smart fella. So, you know, I'm betting that he assumes that it's, you know, military, but why? But I don't care, so never mind.
Yeah, basically, that's what it is. Yeah, he sees this and he's like, oh, wow, okay. And then that's, he says, this is no concern of mine.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting. It's like, well, but it was concern of yours enough to look into it?
Well, I can't find specifically where he says it. Oh, no. But now my curiosity has been inflamed, right? Because the rockets, you know, they launched
well,
them.
Yeah.
Okay. And then he goes and he looks and he sees and he's like, oh, well, I'm done now. I'm like, that doesn't sound inflamed to me. That's like maybe a rash.
No, they shot at you.
Yeah.
And all you want to do is lay eyes on them and that's enough? Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I'm good now. No harm, no foul.
Exactly. It's like, oh, well, I saw it. I got a thing.
But yeah, apparently. He says tapping his wrist.
Yeah, exactly. Powered by the cosmic, my watch.
Of course. God, yes, the power cosmic tells me it's So the Silver Surfer gets to the station nearest the United Nations, which is where he was wanting to go. We cut inside the United Nations building, the tall building for you guys that know how it's laid out. Apparently it's one of the rooms in the big tall building, not the low flat one. And there's a meeting of 5, 6, 8 government officials.
Say national officials.
Yes, I'm sorry, national, yeah. Like either if they're not like UN representatives, mm-hmm. then they're like actual higher up than that,
right.
Yeah, actual leaders or something like that. Although, interestingly enough, they didn't go way out of hand depicting the different potential nationalities of these people.
No, they kind of glossed over, like making them stereotypical.
Or caricature.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just one is from the People's Republic, which in the 70s, that makes sense that if something you wanted to show something behind closed doors, mm-hmm. kind of nefarious, you would include the People's Republic.
Right. Of yeah.
Yeah, no, just the People's Republic.
Yeah,
that's
enough.
All you need to know.
That's all you need.
somebody from the U.S. Apparently leading it, because he's the one primarily talking. And then some others that I don't let me flip through here. I don't think they really played as much a part as the only other speaking person seemed to be the person from the People's Republic.
Yeah, he seemed to be the most interactive.
Right. There's a couple wearing some sort of turban-esque headgear.
Mm-hmm.
I say that way for fear of insulting anyone, because I don't know exactly, you know, what they may be called.
Right.
But one is a dude who doesn't appear to have facial hair, and his is white. But his is of a slightly different style of the other gentleman who has white facial hair, and his is maybe a reddish, piled up higher kind of turban-esque
mm-hmm.
kind of garb. And then there's a black gentleman wearing, looks like more a traditional robe, perhaps, or a traditional covering of some sort. The People's Republic gentleman, the American, and another gentleman at the table are wearing what appear to be suits.
Suits, right.
So suits and tie, actually. So, and basically the U.S. official is talking to them about the threat that the Doomsday Man poses. And the People's Republic representative is concerned about an imperialist trick,
mm-hmm.
and not believing that there is this threat, not believing necessarily about working together because they don't know if this threat is real. It all hinges on him being convinced that the threat exists, mm-hmm. which, in all honesty, the dude hasn't done anything about yet.
No.
So he calls in Dr. Kronton, K-R-O-N-T-O-N. Never heard of the dude, but he works for the government.
That's probably why you've never heard of him.
This is true, or they'd have had to kill me.
Mm-hmm.
And he works, apparently, in their weapons division, department, whatever you want to call it, because he seems to be the one – well, not initially, but we find out. I'll go ahead and spoil the spoiler. that he is the one responsible, ultimately, for the Doomsday Man project. He was the brains behind it. But he is called in here, and he does the – well, you know, this started way back. Go ahead.
No, I think it's funny because it's like it all started with the success of our first moon landing. And before reading on, I'm trying to think, how did you go from moon landing to Doomsday Man? This I want to see. Like, how are you going to explain that?
Not only that, but you know, here it is, the early part of 1970. The moon landing was in 66 or 67,
mm-hmm.
like in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
So in 3 years, this project has gotten to the point that it's at.
Right.
Which is, by the way they work nowadays, that's rather astounding, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So, but he says that with that moon landing, what we wanted to do is come up with robots that could do that for us, stand the rigors of space, stand the different environments that we're liable to encounter in interplanetary exploration.
Well, actually, it's conquering. He flat out says, we knew it was only a first step. We would soon have planets to conquer.
Right, that's true.
The doc plainly says so. You know, if this is U.S. based, then he's flat out saying, "Oh, we had plans to conquer planets, man. That's why we need this robot."
We landed on the moon, and then we wanted to take over Mars.
Yeah, you know, well, we knew that was just the first step, and you know, from there, it's just a hop, skip, and a jump to you know, conquering whole worlds.
That's not bad. Sounds like the military.
And you know what? It only took us 3 years to get our robot.
Yeah, there you go. A robot, which at this point is potentially indestructible enough that they are concerned about it.
Mm-hmm.
They've created it. They don't have a way to stop it per se. They made it. It's not out of control or anything, but if something happens, we already know that we can't stop it because we made it too unstoppable.
Mm-hmm. That also sounds like the military.
Well, yeah, there you go. So what we did is we transported it via submarine. This isn't what he's telling them, but this is what they did. Transported it via submarine to a small island in the middle of the Pacific, out in the middle of nowhere, basically. Moored the submarine offshore somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Floated this large, a little bit more than human size, indestructible robot via dinghy.
Yes.
To the beach.
That was one of my favorite things to see, because I was like, right. Wait, is he standing in that thing?
Yes, he is. with the men pushing and pulling to get him over the shallow part of the beach.
Yeah, I was just like, wow.
So they got him close enough, and then the lead dude here wearing the actual commander's hat. So I don't know what he is, a captain, a general, probably anything from just about captain up, I think I've noticed with that style hat.
Okay.
He's got the control box with
mm-hmm.
him. So he gets the Doomsday Man, which has he, the doctor in his narrative, has he officially named it? I don't believe that's...
At this point, he hasn't.
Yeah, they haven't. But this is the Doomsday Man. So he, this dude that's on this mission with his little control box, gets him to then walk now that he's on the island. gets him to walk. I thought, well, why don't you just push him off the sub? A sub, first of all. Why don't you just push him off the sub and just tell him to walk?
Mm-hmm.
He's indestructible. Salt water is going to be a problem.
Maybe they needed confirmation.
Okay. Story. Moving the story along. Okay, that's cool. And they walk the Doomsday Man into this large concrete bunker, which bears a striking resemblance to the beginnings of a structure that Silver Surfer saw when he ran into this island out in the middle of nowhere that was surrounded by this warship entourage.
Coincidence?
So there we have a connection. Silver Surfer, if he'd had a little bit of gumption, could have put an end to this then rather than now.
Mm-hmm.
But, hey, story again.
He really wasn't inflamed.
No. Well, no. Yeah, his curiosity was sated.
Mm-hmm.
It was. So the bunker is kind of a half football shape, oblongish, flat on the ground. Like you took a football and sliced it down the middle lengthwise, and then just put half of it on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
With large, he calls them tumblers, but they're large bars that connect the two sides that. They close along those bars, sealing shut, making a perfectly sealed environment in this half football shape.
Yep.
Of, I don't know, looking at this one panel, that's probably a good 8 to 10 feet of concrete wall there.
Let's see here.
Where he's walking into it.
Yeah. He's that much taller looking at his arms. I'd say at least 8 feet thick of probably reinforced concrete.
Right. And that could be just the door.
Yeah.
Who's to say that there's not something on inside that also closed or something like that? But the case being, what they tried to do is take this indestructible robot, place him in a concrete bunker, concrete pillbox, whatever you want to call it, and seal him in there. Because then, as soon as the door shuts, this commanding dude hits a self-destruct on the Doomsday Man's control box, and the control box blows up. The idea being, of course, that we are the only ones that can control him, and now the controller is gone, so we're good.
Yeah, we're safe. Everything's okay.
So then some of the other members of the group here start they start asking questions. They start making some points, you know. The doctor tells them, well, we've started picking up earth tremors, which to me is kind of funny because he says earth tremors have been reported from the aisle. That means the robot is moving.
Yeah.
And my question is, what kind of movement is he doing that causes earth tremors?
That they can pick up back in the 70s.
Well, they had seismic devices. Well, no, back then.
I know, but I mean, it's just like,
and if they had I would envision that they had other things set up on the island, that they just didn't place this and leave it.
Mm-hmm.
That there's probably some small manned thing to watch. So my thinking was that there was somebody on the island to detect it on the island.
Okay, now see, I could see that, but like you know, my thing was just, you know, what. He's active, okay, but what is he doing? And like a 1 point, a 2 point, a 3 point, at what point on the Richter scale are you all picking these things up, and what is he doing to do them?
To cause that. That was my thought.
Yeah.
It's like he's moving around and he's causing tremors. So that is what has caused the United States' concern. And so that, I would think, is what is being reported now in the papers that has everybody in an uproar.
Mm-hmm.
As much as the U.S. would want to release of that kind of information, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Downstairs, the Silver Surfer is there. He's confronted by a security officer as he's trying to get into the U.N. And the security officer stops him because he doesn't have a pass. And the Silver Surfer says, once again, the unthinking voice of petty officialdom.
Yeah.
And then he mentally calls for his board, which okay. You know, it's kind of odd. And he jumps on the board still in his human guise. Mm-hmm. He doesn't throw off anything so that he's unencumbered or anything. So he jumps up on the board with this rain suit and clothes and keeping his hat on too.
That's the power cosmic right there.
As an avid hat wearer, that is impressive to me.
Mm-hmm.
Because he jumps on it as it zooms by and then he starts climbing up, mm-hmm. either going around the building or just at a nifty incline on that face of the building. It's kind of hard to tell.
Yeah.
Until he passes by a window and he sees some people conceivably arguing in here. And he says, there is what I seek. Okay. I'm not sure how he knew that. He didn't stop to listen or use his power cosmic to snoop. He just looks in and he's like, oh, that's the one.
Yep.
And then now I must enter as effortlessly as possible. So he said, let one cosmic thrust, another cosmic thrust,
yep.
remove the center window pane. So he takes the glass off, floats it while he goes in, and while he's in there speaking to him, it is still floating because it's in several subsequent panels.
Yeah, above everyone's heads.
Yeah, the big window is just being held aloft. While he's in here talking and doing all this other stuff, it's, you know, still there. And the officials, representatives are rather taken aback by, first of all, who is this person? You know, I would think, how in the world did you get up here coming through the window?
Mm-hmm.
But the doctor's like, oh, the surfer. Because he says, he takes his glasses off, takes his hat off, and says, I am the Silver Surfer. And probably in that voice.
Most likely,
The doctor is like, the surfer, fate is with us. Only he might have the power to stop the robot. Nobody else apparently knows him, but the doctor does.
Yep. And that's the only superhero in the universe that can help, too.
The weapon manufacturer for the government is aware of the silver. I'm not sure that bodes well, but
probably not.
There we have it. So again, the voice of unreason is the People's Republic representative. He keeps saying that he is concerned about imperialist tricks.
Mm-hmm.
Imperialist is like his word of the day.
Well, yeah, it's his catchphrase.
Yeah, he keeps lobbing that one out there. You know, just as fast as he can get it. Mm-hmm. So, they get into a little discussion, the representatives amongst themselves. We see in the panel here, they break off and they start talking. The doctor kind of pulls the Silver Surfer away and says, you know, hey, let's do something. You know, I can help you find this Doomsday Man, basically, if you help us do something.
Mm-hmm.
So the surfer grabs him up on his surfboard and zooms out the window so fast that the doctor starts to suffocate.
Mm-hmm.
And the Silver Surfer's like, oh, yeah, my bad. I forgot that you humans are like that. And he whammies him and surrounds him with a cosmic field trapping air in, a protective force field around the dude.
Right, yep.
So that he can breathe and so that he can stand the rigors of this super speed that they're going to experience on this surfboard as the Silver Surfer jets to this island, which he really shouldn't need much help getting to because he's already been there.
Right, right. And, of course, it's also to help the good doctor stay on the board.
Stay on the board, right, yes. Decreasing drag, mm-hmm. but increasing the doctor's personal drag,
mm-hmm.
so
yep.
he sticks somehow. Also, we noticed that the Silver Surfer loses all of his earthly togs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now he is just the regular silver-skinned head-to-toe dude on his big silver surfboard. And for those of you that may be more knowledgeable on surfboards, this is one of the long ones. I know there are various sizes. I don't know, but this is probably a 12 or 14 foot board that the Silver Surfer rides here.
Well, I mean, you know, those galactic waves can get pretty massive, I hear.
I guess.
So you got to have a board.
Cosmic waves.
Yeah.
Yes.
So you got to have a board to handle them.
We get to the island. The Silver Surfer, the doctor tries to do something, hop off the board here or something like that. And he's like, you know, hey, what about this thing? And the Silver Surfer's like, oh, yeah. And he takes the bubble off of him because it was apparently messing with the dock. I'm surprised he was even able to try to get off the board. But
well, I mean, if it's meant to keep him on the board, he's standing up, I'm like, how'd you do that, dude?
Standing up and looks like taking a step off. Mm-hmm. You know, I would think he would just turn and bounce off of it because it's not going anywhere.
Right.
But no, he made some headway. So let's see. What about me? I'm trapped here. The trap is sprung. Now come. I don't quite understand that talk.
Well,
that remains is to find the bunker. That makes sense.
He's saying, you know, oh, well, I'm trapped. Well, here, boom, the trap is sprung.
Oh, the trap is
okay. Which means now you're free. Now come on.
Weird writing.
Yeah, it really was.
So now they're at the bunker. The doctor tells him that this bunker is designed to withstand an atom bomb, which I assume means a direct strike. So the Silver Surfer just says, with the power cosmic, and says, well, then we'll tunnel under it.
Because the bottom is the weakest point.
Right, yeah, he can't, yeah. Okay, so they tunnel underneath it. And they get underneath it, and Silver Surfer clears away, you know, the immediate dirt so that a portion of the underside is exposed, and says, above us, many protective devices and deadly alarms. We must take no chances with a single one. And he thus let them all become diffused. Mm-hmm. So whatever things, he just took them all, took care of all of them at the same time.
Yep, it's that cosmic thrust again, Matt.
Yeah. They looks like blast their way through the floor because the floor is peeled back.
Mm-hmm.
And they climb up into it, and looking around, they don't immediately see the robot. And then the Silver Surfer is felled by an energy bolt of some sort. The doctor screaming his fool head off for the Surfer to save me, save me. As Surfer gains his wits, he looks and the Doomsday Man, with a smoking gun orifice, I guess, where one arm should be.
Yeah.
It's not like an arm. It appears to be a stunted energy weapon.
Cannon, yeah.
He's carrying the doctor walking away. And the Silver Surfer, in fighting back, is concerned that he's going to hit the doctor with his energy beams, emissions from his hand, the power cosmic bolts. And so he sends them curving around. So we see this almost cascading around the robot as these bolts are circling.
Mm-hmm.
I get the impression that they never really struck the robot, because before they could, another weapon emerges from the robot's mouth that again hits Silver Surfer with a bolt of energy, stunning him, apparently, definitely stopping his assault on the robot's person.
Yeah.
The doctor still is trying to yell for help. He's talking out here. Well, the Surfer didn't have as much power as I thought. Now there's nobody, you know, that can help me. And then he realizes, oh, well, now the robot's putting me down. Oh no, he's going for the bomb. And the Surfer's like, what bomb?
Wait, what?
And the doctor tells him, well, it was hidden here years ago. Here being this same bunker?
Yes.
Apparently.
Not just the same island.
So that means that the Silver Surfer visited the island years ago now.
Mm-hmm.
In his just recently, or however it was he put it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the world's first cobalt bomb the doctor says. It was too deadly to stockpile to even dream of using, so we buried it here. So who knows what other devices, once developed, it was determined they were too dangerous, the government has stored in this bunker.
Well, here's my thing. Who is running this waste of money? Because it's like, I want you to make the most deadly bomb. Okay, I got it. It's a cobalt bomb. Whoa, that's too deadly, dude. We need to put it on the island. Okay.
Right. No. Yeah. We can't use that.
All right. Well, I want you to make this robot, and I want it to be indestructible, and it's going to go out with our astronauts, and it's going to conquer worlds. Okay, I can do that. Whoa. No. See, we can't stop that thing if something happens. So you need to put it on the island with the most deadliest bomb that we couldn't control that I wanted you to build.
Right. Good job, but it's too indestructible.
Yeah.
The bomb is too deadly. Your deadly bomb is too deadly.
Exactly.
And your indestructible robot is too indestructible. Okay.
The man's a genius because he builds great stuff, but I think they need to fire him.
I'm not sure if that is job security or not.
I don't, he does what he's asked, but then they put it on the island, and evidently it's never used.
So the robot now, the Doomsday Man, has the cobalt bomb, and he's shouldered it, and he's walking off, walks through the wall of the bunker into the ocean. He's just on a mission somewhere. The Silver Surfer says, well, you know, we got to follow him. We definitely have to stop him now because not only is he indestructible, but he has this deadliest bomb.
Mm-hmm.
Dives into the water after Doomsday Man, surrounds the doctor again with a bubble, this time protecting him from the water, holding in the oxygen. Let's see. Doctor says, oh, well, he's going for the mainland. And Silver Surfer says, why would he do that? And the doctor is, what? If he can explode that bomb on the mainland. And Silver Surfer is like, oh, yeah, that would be bad.
You know? It's like, oh, then people would, oh, I get it. People.
I see what you did there.
All right. That's a bad idea. We should stop that.
So the Doomsday Man does make landfall in, I don't know if they're wanting you to think that it's San Francisco, but there's a bridge here that kind of put me in mind of San Francisco.
Yeah, that definitely looks like the Golden Gate.
The Golden Gate, yeah. Although, his meeting at the UN was in, of course, New York. That's where the UN is. But they said that the island was in the Pacific, so he did fly all the way across the country. So, yeah, I guess the first landfall of American soil could very well be California.
Yep.
Doomsday Man's just walking along, plodding along. The Silver Surfer is strafing him. With the Power Cosmic from his surfboard zooming above.
Mm-hmm.
And the Doomsday Man is finally determined that, well, you know, this has just got to stop. So he puts the bomb down, and then he turns and focuses on the Silver Surfer by ripping off a street lamp post and throwing it at Silver Surfer. Surfer dodges it, does a little bit of wanton destruction on a building here, but in zipping around to avoid it, Silver Surfer, of course, stays on his surfboard, but the doctor gets tousled a little bit such that the Silver Surfer basically has to save him and then deposit him on the ground.
Yep.
Turns and focuses on the Doomsday Man, who just has decided to focus his attention back on the bomb, so he's going to pick it back up. And as he's walking to it, the Silver Surfer uses the Power Cosmic and opens up a hole, or digs a hole, however you want to put it, blasts a hole in front of him, right before getting to the bomb. So the Doomsday Man falls into this hole, but is grasping on the lip of the hole.
Mm-hmm.
As the doctor now is running up to it, saying, hold on, don't fall, I'll get you, I'll save you, you mustn't fall. Which, is kind of odd for the Doctor to say, in that he wants Silver Surfer to stop the Doomsday Man.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so... Mm-hmm. Okay. So he goes to try to save or assist the Doomsday Man, but he gets too close, and I guess just thinking he's enemy in general, Doomsday Man just smacks him with the hand.
Yeah, it's like, oh, no, another attack. Wham!
Yeah, with the good hand. And in doing that, that really is the only hand that he has. The other is this stunted cannon-looking thing. So when he releases this...
Which is funny. I want to bring it up. Is he hitting backhanded or forehanded? Because the way...
It looks like he's hitting him with the palm.
Well, then that would be the right side, so the right side. So that's a bit inconsistent, right?
Oh, they've switched sides of the hand.
Or is he backhanding? See, I couldn't tell. I looked at that panel for a while, and I'm like...
Well, if you look at the previous panel, the way he's approaching the robot, right?
Yeah.
It could be the backhand, but assuming that the Doctor approaches just a little bit more closely to the bomb,
mm-hmm.
a forehand would be pretty easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
But in this next panel, there is no – the bomb isn't in that – so, yeah, somehow orientation got off one way or another between all of this.
Yep.
But, yeah, if he – he could hit him forehand, but if he did, then in this panel with the of the Doctor screaming, mm-hmm. the bomb should be there behind the Doctor.
Yep.
For it to have been a forehand. So, yeah, chances are they just did it and – it is a backhand, and they inadvertently switched hands.
Yeah.
Letting go to do that, the Doomsday Man then plummets into the hole that the Silver Surfer cut, which we find extends to the core of the Earth.
Yes.
Nothing came back up.
No.
The
bottomless pit that Surfer says that he creates.
Right.
Stops. Goes to the core of the planet where Mr. Indestructible is supposed to be able to go.
Yes.
Environments so like
gonna,
that.
It's not going to damage him. It'll just trap him, kind of like the bunker on the island was supposed to do.
Right. And, well, that worked so well.
So the Doomsday Man defeated. Silver Surfer grabs up the cobalt bomb and flings it off planet into the upper atmosphere, whatever level of the atmosphere, at which point the bomb does explode. Mm-hmm. So I guess the Doomsday Man had turned it on?
Okay.
And the Silver Surfer here kind of eulogizes the dead Doctor. And the crowd of humans that are in the area watching start talking about Silver Surfer's apparent involvement in this.
Yeah.
In different ways. Making him out to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
Is what they're doing. And as they're mumbling and jawing and everything, the Silver Surfer on the final panel just walks through the crowd and walks on.
Again, where's his board?
Yeah, I don't know. It's I guess a lot of things like that just can be left out. Again, just to advance the story, I mean, I guess is what they want, you know?
Well, but I mean, I would think that one would be able to portray the same sense of emotion even while he just drifts on or zooms away forlorn on his board.
Particularly since the dude there at the end mentions something about seeing tears.
Exactly.
That is kind of your clincher about what is going on. You know, that is the emotion mm-hmm. in those final few panels. So anything could have been done, in essence, except of him killing a human with his bare hand.
Right.
And one of the human beings have said that, and you would have been like, oh, okay.
Now I see. Oh.
Right. He eulogized the Doctor and or the fact that he's, you know, looked at this way and the tear. Okay. I see what you're doing. But, so.
Yeah.
Okay, so now our second book is
Hold on.
The Submariner. But yes, Levi, you wanted to throw something out here.
I did actually. Before I do that, let's give a rating on the book.
Okay. What do you want to just do like a thumbs up, thumbs down in general kind of thing?
Yeah, I think that'll be simpler, easy to keep. So why don't we do that?
Oh, okay, are we going to do like any half or quarter, or is it just a one or a zero?
For me, man, I either like the book or I don't.
Okay.
So I mean, it's pretty easy. I mean, if it entertained me, then I liked it. If it didn't entertain me, I don't. So I mean, I'm just going to go with either or.
We're just looking then at a one or a zero.
Yep.
Okay, Silver Surfer issue 13. What'd you give it?
I give it a thumbs down, man.
Down? Okay.
Because honestly, if you read it, he's just so whiny. You know?
Okay. So would that be you? Are you thumbs downing the character or
no,
the writing of this story?
Well,
Could it be said that you're not a Silver Surfer fan also?
Well, I mean, yeah, I'm not. I've never really gotten him, and every time I've read any of the comics that had him in it, he's always lamenting something, his existence, his existence with humans, his past life, his lost life. He's just always whining about something, and it's just like, dude, I get it. You're stuck on Earth. Yes, it sucks, but make the most of it. You've got the power cosmic.
And you can fly on a surfboard
real
fast in underwater, in the atmosphere.
Exactly.
You know, who knows? He may be able to make it to the moon. I'm not sure if he can or not, but
he's got the cosmic thrust.
Right. So
and he's still whiny. So I just writing makes him whiny, so the character itself comes out looking whiny. So, like I said, me personally, thumbs down.
Okay, I probably give it a thumbs down also. I think I see the point as far as how Stan Lee wants to use the character.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand why in this era of the high adventure superhero market, which is just storming through everything in comic books, mm-hmm. why it was felt that this type of character was needed. You know,
I don't know.
Why this angle? So yeah, now with so many people exploring so many different aspects of creativity, mm-hmm. I could see a character like this coming out in contemporary books.
Right.
But in the 70s with the Avengers and the Fantastic Four and Iron Man, Captain America, your angsty kind of delving inner man would be the Hulk, who is doing fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
But ratcheting that up even in another character, the Silver Surfer, in my mind, that's what that is.
Yeah.
I just don't – yeah, I'm not sure why. A lot of interviews and whatnot that I've seen from Stan Lee, when he's talking about this time, he was trying to be very young and hip and
right.
Daddy-o and get mm-hmm. the teens and everything like that. And I don't see Silver Surfer doing any of that.
Well, I mean, he was way off with the emo character.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can see maybe facets of what Silver Surfer says or does or thinks as being possibly a an outlet for the greater social conscience of America at the time.
Perhaps.
But then he Wayne's whiny.
yeah, you're right. It's not counterculture. It's why me?
Yeah, and or woe is me. Exactly.
Yeah. So it's what could have been the not trying to minimalize it or anything, but some sort of hippie mouthpiece almost, mm-hmm. or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
To turn into this, the 1970s equivalent of a cutter.
It's just like, exactly.
Really, Stan? That's what you were. Yeah. So, and if you asked him now, the man's like 5 million years old.
Yeah.
He's not have a clue as to why he did it that way then.
He's not. If he does remember, it'll be, the stories or conversations that he's had in the past 10 to 30 years about it.
Yeah.
And he's going to piece it together, and it's, no, what I originally meant was.
Right.
Really?
Yeah. I would love to have been able to sit down with him, maybe right after he stopped writing the book or it got canceled or whatever happened, and ask him, Stan, what was your goal? What were you trying to do?
Yeah.
And then ask him, did you do that?
how did it work out? I mean, did you accomplish what you wanted?
So. Yeah, so I would also go with the thumbs down. So that's two thumbs down from the Moore brothers for Silver Surfer issue 13.
Yes, yes it is. All right, so that second bit of business. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to give out a challenge to those of you that listen to us. It's basically going to be the word of the show. Now, here's the challenge. We want you to come up with a word. And now, of course, it's got to be a real word. And no Klingon, please. That we have to use, either Ed or myself, in reference to the comics that we review on the show. So we have to use it properly and in a sentence that makes sense. That's your challenge. Send us your words, and we will use them in the show, and we will even mention you on air as the person who challenged us with that word.
Right, the purveyor of said word.
Yes. So I take my glove off, I smack, and I toss down. The next move is yours.
I will have no problem admitting at the end of a show if I was not able to work a particular word in.
Oh, me neither, because, some of the comics, it's just like, that word just does not fit.
Right, I couldn't find a place to put that.
It's like that positive word and that joy and this comic, and it was black and white and dark and evil, and it's like, sorry, we lost.
Good word.
I mean, unless you want us to just say it was not, insert word here. Which is kind of lame, so,
That's not, I don't think that's in the spirit of what we're trying to, so we won't do that.
No, we actually have to use it as it is intended to be used.
Right. Okay, let's see, Submariner Volume... excuse me, issue 22.
Mm-hmm.
The cover, as soon as I flip it open here, the cover says Prince Namor, which I guess is the actual title of the book, Prince Namor, the Submariner, says Doctor Strange lives, but will the Submariner?
Mm-hmm.
And on the cover is the Submariner in a cemetery, crouching as he's holding up like a tombstone or a gravestone, like he's unearthed something underneath something.
Yeah.
And he's holding that something up that he's messing with underneath, reaching for some two-headed funky idol. And then seemingly, which this just is not remotely what happened, but seemingly rising from a grave behind him is the figure of that era's Doctor Strange.
Now, two major things right here.
Okay.
First, I enjoyed this cover a lot more than I did the cover of the Silver Surfer.
Okay.
One of the biggest things is because, for me, this told of more intrigue.
Okay, yeah.
You know, why is the Submariner on land in a graveyard reaching for an idol?
Oh, okay, yeah.
Okay, but the second thing, and this is the biggest thing, me being not a big comic book reader in the past, or really in the present, not big, I didn't know that Doctor Strange ever looked like that.
Okay, all right.
So this was one of those kind of cool, oh, look at that. I didn't know that about that character. Cool.
Now, I did a little bit of research on Doctor Strange because of this very thing. For those of you that may not know, at this point in time, and for a little bit before this, and it turns out for a little bit after, there's a smallish window of time, Doctor Strange is outfitted in skin tight, head to toe, blue outfit with blue gloves. He is completely covered, a lot like the Silver Surfer, only in blue.
Exactly. I mean, like the headpiece, like he looks like he's bald, and it looks like he's got, you know, like blue skin and everything.
Right.
I didn't know that this was a look for Doctor Strange ever, really.
Okay. Now, the reason creatively for this is a particular creative team's idea to make Doctor Strange look more like the other superheroes of the Marvel Universe.
Bald?
Well, he's got a full body suit.
Well,
it's a more...
I mean, I
it's... You know, it's more a he rather than being just a man in a cape,
right,
with, you know, like just some fancy duds on, like Doctor Strange normally is. No, he puts on an outfit now, and it just so happens that it covers him. He puts a mask on that makes it look like it's his skin, but it's a skin tight mask,
right,
over his head, and the rest of him is covered with gloves. So it's like he's wearing a blue bodysuit, head to toe, kind of like these blue men or green men have started popping up at the hockey games and whatnot that people do. Except he does have the big cape with the collar turned up that Doctor Strange has, and the yellow accoutrement with the big Eye of Agamotto and the yellow sash. So, I mean, looking at him, if you didn't know, you'd be like, well, you know, he looks kind of like Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
So, now, story-wise, I couldn't find quickly why the character started dressing like this. If I recall, there was someone assumed his identity but could not pull off looking like him, so they started wearing this outfit.
To impersonate him?
Yes.
Okay.
But they couldn't change their physical features.
Right.
So they covered that up, in essence.
And he...
Or not in essence, in reality.
And he took that look?
Yeah, when he regained his, you know, the persona, or however you want to term it, when Stephen Strange got back to being Doctor Strange, he kept that coverage like that for some reason, and I believe that it was so that someone somewhere would think that he, Doctor Strange, was still this other person that had been impersonating him.
Okay.
And then it just kind of stuck around for a little while, and then ultimately he threw it off and started doing the uncovered head, barehanded kind of thing.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it was a little jarring, because I'm like, wait, what?
Yeah, I remember in my readings that once upon a time, either he was taken over by an evil entity, or they had stymied him somehow, had captured him and set him aside, and assumed but his place, I guess you could say, in the Marvel Universe. Mm-hmm. But I remember that this blue aspect like this was looked upon as a bad guy for a little while.
Oh, okay.
So
a little Phantom-esque.
Yeah, and I'm sure if we went back and you know, really read through the previous year or two of Doctor Strange, mm-hmm. we would run into why, because he and this is something else I wanted to bring up. He had a book,
mm-hmm.
Had his own title, and it was unceremoniously canceled.
Really? Just chopping block?
Out from under the creators, apparently.
Ooh.
But they were told over the period of a couple months that they could finish that story that they had been building to in the Doctor Strange title. One of those here finishes is this issue of Namor, the Submariner. A couple months later, they finish up the story in an issue of The Hulk.
Okay.
And then after those two things, Doctor Strange apparently is gone for 6-8 months and then pops up in an anthology title opposite, who was it I read? Iceman, maybe? One of the X-Men? Mm. Iceman, I think. So, yeah, so at least they did give the creators a chance somewhere to finish up this Doctor Strange story.
Right.
And since this was one of the books, I don't remember the previous issue of Namor that we covered, but I would assume that it didn't necessarily have anything to do with this particular story other than the situation that Namor finds himself in at the beginning.
Right, yeah.
You know, that could easily be a carryover into this story, and they use it, which, for those of you guys who don't know this particular story, Namor apparently has lost his ability to breathe underwater. Because when this story opens, he has a helmet on, a breathing apparatus, as he is descending to Atlantis to seek treatment for the fact that he has now lost his ability to breathe underwater.
Mm-hmm.
They tell us later on in this book how it happened, but unless you've been reading previous issues, you don't really get into the why.
Right.
You would have to specifically read to find out. So that's where the story opens, entitled The Monarch and the Mystic, created by Stan Lee and Roy Thomas. Stan Lee's everywhere. Well, he's the editor on this one.
Right.
I'm sorry, I'll throw that out. Roy Thomas is the writer, with Marie Severin is the artist. Johnny Craig is the inker, and Artie Simic is the letterer.
Now, let me ask an ignorant question. Marie?
You know, I believe that that is a man.
Okay, see, that's what I was wondering.
If that's, let me see if the Google Foo quickly works here. Nope, I'm sorry, it is a she.
Really?
I have always assumed that that was a he with the name Marie, but that was a she. The Wikipedia starts out, an American comic book artist and colorist, best known for her work for Marvel Comics and the 1950s EC. So she would have worked at EC first and then come to Marvel.
Ah, now see, that's pretty cool.
And EC, I don't, you know, again, for those of you that aren't all that comic knowledgeable about the older stuff, EC was a predominantly horror company. They did a lot of horror and sci-fi, but even their sci-fi was the more gory, gruesome kind of sci-fi, easily could be termed horror.
Mm-hmm.
EC Comics were primarily the comic books that were coming out that were in large part responsible for the attack on comic books that occurred in the late 40s and early 50s. As far as them being unfit for children.
Oh, because of content and everything?
Yeah, a lot of that was based on EC Comics.
Mm.
Because that's all they did. It was all horror books. And at that time, you didn't have the Comics Code Authority, because they came about because of agreements due to this
EC fallout.
Assault on comic books. Right.
Okay.
So there were depictions of violence, violence against women, violence against kids, you know, just things that were intended to, quote unquote, cause nightmare or nightmarish situations or things like that. That's what they were trying to do.
Right.
You know, So those were the kind of stories. Horrible monsters, blood dripping from the mouths, blood on the hand, one hand clutching a person collapsed in the other hand. You know, I mean, just definite what they were trying to get across just in the pictures.
Right.
Much less the textual part of the story. So, and I'm trying to think what that guy's name that went to Congress and started the hearings and all that stuff. And I should know his name, but his name's not Wertham. W-E-R-T-H-A-M, Dr. Wertham. And I believe he was a child psychologist, now that I get the name out there.
Okay.
And so he led the witch hunts against comic books when they occurred, and I believe they were in the early to middle-ish 50s, if I can recall my history, 60s. I think early to middle 50s, might have even been late 50s to early 60s.
Hmm.
But in the 50s somewhere was Dr. Wertham and his comic books are terrible for kids and they're jading our children and save the kids and all that stuff that we've heard about happening. Okay. Submariner. Namor is descending towards Atlantis with an aide here with him. And right now they haven't said the name, but I think he says his name here in a minute. As Namor is seeking treatment for the fact, as I said, that he has lost to his ability, actually it was taken away from him, the ability to breathe underwater. He has to breathe with artificial help in this case here.
I know, but
do what?
I'm sorry.
Oh, okay, that's okay. The big glass dome helmet that a lot of times you see with undersea things, 360-degree clear helmet. So he is going to see his scientist, Ichthon, who is aware of the problem, knows that Namor is coming. We see here Lady Dorma also is waiting in the laboratory for Prince Namor, who is her beloved. She's greatly concerned about him, but feels that it would belittle her station. And the prince himself, who is at this time the ruler of Atlantis, if she outwardly showed too much emotional concern over his situation.
Yeah.
She must be regal in her grief.
Right.
So they get Namor down into the laboratory here, and they situate him in a oxygen-filled chamber so that he can take off the helmet at least, but he still doesn't have full run of anything. He still has to be in an oxygen environment, as we would as terrestrial beings if we were in Atlantis.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of puts me in mind of that, what was it called? The Deep? Was that the one with the aliens and how they get the oil rig diver and they take him to their city under the water, and they put him in this room, and then the force fields push the water aside and forms the wall of the room.
Okay, no, I know the scene. I don't know the name, but I know the scene. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, he was deep diving, so he had inhaled this fluid that was supposed to allow him to dive deeper.
It was liquid oxygen.
He vomited all that up because now he was in a oxygen gaseous oxygen environment, so he had to get that out of his... Yeah, that's what I think of when I see somebody who is terrestrial in an underwater thing, that pushing the water back and being in this dry room kind of thing.
Yeah.
And Namor starts... we get a flashback to what happened to his gills. A race, the race... it doesn't say race here.
No, but those... When I first saw the picture of that race, it reminded me of what are they called? the Avengers fought them
in the movie. In the Avengers movie, those aliens or?
I think.
Or no, you're talking about the Kree or the
yes. Yeah, no. It's the Kree.
Or the Skrulls.
Yeah, no. Okay, yeah.
The Skrulls were the green lizardy-looking dudes. The Krees usually have either blue skin or pink skin, and they're much more human-looking.
Okay, no, it was the Skrulls. But it's just this dude looked, minus the green skin, he looked a lot like a Skrull. And, you know, it was like, oh, well, you know, this is Marvel in the timeline.
It could have been, and they just didn't give the aliens, hadn't given them a name then. But mm-hmm. I know here, around this time, we have the initial Kree-Skrull war that occurs in Avengers. So they knew the Skrull, you know, at some point here soon, if it wasn't intended to be them here.
Mm-hmm.
But Namor is taken by an alien race from Earth, is in essence kidnapped, operated on to close off his gills, has some kind of – let's see here. Wait a minute. I missed this. No, we don't know. It's almost like – see, something happens here because Namor is unconscious, and I'm looking to see – why he was unconscious. And so he fell asleep for the treatment, I guess is what happened.
Yeah.
It doesn't really show why, it just shows the other end.
Well, he was under anesthesia.
They didn't say that when it happens here. So you think that he's flashing back, but actually it turns out that what he's doing is in a sleep state, or I guess a fugue state, he is recalling this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just a flashback. This is almost like he is dreaming this as part of something else that's going to happen here in a second. But the alien race took away his gills. He was saved by an inhuman named Triton, who appears with Submariner on and off. The Inhumans are an offshoot of humanity, all of which have powers. Every Inhuman has powers. Triton is a member of the ruling family. He's like a cousin, I think, to the king. And his powers happen to manifest in water related. He can breathe water. He can swim well. He's protected by these scales. Very fish. Manphibian kind of thing, mm-hmm. if you will. And in the midst of Namor remembering this, the thing with Triton and Dorma's appearance, his beloved Atlantean wife, the Atlanteans have the blue skin like this, which I would assume is a previous issue if we went back and looked. In the midst of this, Doctor Strange approaches Namor in his dream. And elicits, although that's kind of a light word for what he does, he kind of like subjugates Namor's will
mm-hmm.
to get Namor's help.
Yep.
Physically. And he plants, he now starts feeding Namor information that he will need to do this thing for Doctor Strange via images in this dream fugue state. And you can see as he's remembering what happened to him that caused him to lose his gills, it kind of shifts once Doctor Strange appears in his dream to be this thing that Doctor Strange is directing
mm-hmm.
as he's telling Namor the story about the undying ones, an old race of beings that used to be on this planet prior to us, and then once the Homo species developed, they were still here, and they were ruled by one called the Nameless One. All of the undying ones, very nightmarishly bestial looking. I get in mind the Cthulhu mythos with mm. these creatures, the Nameless One, the undying ones. I think that's kind of what they're playing on. Even if they're just touching on it, I don't. My understanding of the Cthulhu mythos is not this small scale, but I think that's what they're playing on. And we have the story of the idol that we saw on the front cover that Namor was reaching for. That is what Doctor Strange needs Namor to find.
Mm-hmm.
So he gives him the backstory, several images of this idol so that he knows, and then he tells him to awake. And when Namor awakes, he has been operated on by his scientists and given back the gill-breathing apparatus and abilities. So his natural underwater breathing ability comes back, or is back. Namor immediately, such that he crashes out of this air chamber that he's in, to go on this hunt mission for Doctor Strange, and comes out of the waters in the Atlantic Ocean, which I guess we assume is where Atlantis is, and a lot of the legends, I guess, put it somewhere on that side mm-hmm. of the planet as opposed to over in the Pacific
right.
side. So he comes from the Atlantic side to Boston.
Boston.
Is where he starts his search. And again, a lot of this is information, even though any specific thing that he's talking about or he's doing, we might not have seen.
Mm-hmm.
In general, all of this information was fed to him in this dream by Doctor Strange. So what he thinks and what his motivations are, we might not be aware of other than whatever Namor is doing, Doctor Strange is getting him to do.
Yeah, and he kind of makes it clear when he says, somehow, I know I have a mission here, you know, in Boston.
Right, yeah. Yeah, he doesn't know the specifics, but he just knows I'm supposed to be here.
Yeah, he's being compelled, basically.
Right. So he finds a homeless shelter. He calls it – or not a homeless shelter. Namor calls it a house of charity, like the Red Cross, I imagine, or something like that, one of those places, to get clothes. And he dresses – he covers himself because Namor basically has the wristbands and he has the nice little Speedos, and that's all he ever has.
Yep. Yeah,
wings on his ankles,
yep.
of course, but – That's all he ever wears. So he covers up, goes traipsing through Boston until he gets to where he feels he is supposed to be. And it's this house. And as he reaches for the knocker physically or Namor gets an image of some sort of undying one, nameless one kind of face.
Yeah, wingless or winged beasty thing.
Yeah. And then it disappears. So, you know, in my mind, it's like that is telling Namor that this is the right place.
Yeah.
So he knocks on the door. A young lady answers, and he gives his name as Mackenzie, his last name, which that turns out to be Prince Namor's human father's name. Last name.
Oh, okay.
Mackenzie. So it is his real name because he lived a portion of his life on land as the adopted son of a human. But if I recall, the human was a fisherman, a boat fisherman, and the female came to him and asked him to watch her child or something like that. So he didn't necessarily have a mother that I recall, but he did have a human father, and his last name was Mackenzie.
Mm.
So when he goes on the down low, he'll use that Mackenzie name.
Oh, okay.
He kind of forces his way into this house, asking to speak to Kenneth Ward. The young lady says, well, that's – well, no, she doesn't. I'm sorry. She says, well, I'm – well, no, she does. I'm his daughter. So she says, well, that's my dad. He's not here. And then Namor gets this psychic message, the den, Submariner. You must search the den. And he says, yes, I hear you. And Joella's like, what? You hear what?
Yeah.
And he's like, stand aside, female. I have no time to answer. And he throws the doors open to the den and sees that the den has been ransacked. The female never really has a chance to say anything, so I don't know if she realized that the den had been trashed or anything. I would imagine she didn't, because Namor gets in there, surveys the place, and is immediately attacked he's attacked by an undying one. Yeah,
yeah.
Nameless was the leader. An undying one who is a feline-ish, tigerish,
beastie,
winged, furry, covered. Yeah, it's like a three or four different animals together here, a menagerie. Attacks him, starts stripping off his clothes. He gives it the Namor gives it the big punchy, and the punch is enough to something, because the creature then starts to fade out of reality. It discorporates, floats away like smoke. So maybe it was there. I guess it was there because his clothes got torn, but then it goes somewhere, or he killed it, and that's what happens when it's killed. You don't really know. Either way, he defeats it.
Yeah.
Goes to check on the woman, I guess, because she didn't follow him in the room, and here was this bad guy, so I guess he's thinking, well, I better check on her, and she's laying out in the hall unconscious. She says that she saw this thing, and, you know, describes it as this big heinous thing, and Namor gives her the there, actually, and continues his search. He notices one of the pictures that it's been slashed when he first went in. He goes back to that picture, is inspecting it, flips it over, and on the reverse, it says, "He who lit the first match pyre now guards the demon's dark desire," and it's signed Kenneth Ward.
Which pyre?
What did I say?
Match.
Oh yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. The first witch pyre.
Because it'll be relevant as where he goes next. So
yeah. Signed Kenneth Ward, and Kenneth Ward because Doctor Strange told Namor that was the person he needed to get in touch with for some reason, and we know it's to find this idol that he kept showing Namor in his dreams. Namor notices. Maybe on this picture. So I'm sorry, he didn't pick up the one that was slashed. He just found a picture, looked on the reverse, and then looked at the cover, the actual painting, and says, "Huh, this woman looks a lot like you." And she says, "Yes, that's my grandmother." Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So Namor gets her, and
forcibly takes her with him.
Basically, yeah, he drags her out. Onto the grounds of this house to the statue of a nearby cemetery, to the statue of John Goodwin, who was a judge at some of the original, I assume Salem, but it doesn't say Salem, it says old.
Mm-hmm.
Boston. I'm sorry, not old. Old Boston witch trials. I don't remember at the time of the Salem trials that they were going through Boston, but they could have because all of that was going on at the same time everywhere.
Right.
You just heard, for whatever reason, I don't know about the Salem ones, but there were witch hunts everywhere.
And so, and yeah, John Goodwin, he didn't start any match trials.
No, he started. He presided over witch trials.
Exactly,
yes.
Exactly. See that connection? See that?
Yes, it was very important.
Yep.
It's a subtle word change there, but it made a lot of difference.
It did.
Namor, let's see, is he reading? Maybe he's reading or something, because he says it was he who, quote, lit the first witch pyre. So I don't know how he knows that or if that was told to him by Doctor Strange, but he knows. And as he's approaching this statue to further investigate it, Joella kind of faints away behind him.
Yeah, this sequence was really weird.
Yeah, there appears to be – now, okay, first of all, the coloration is rather than black – of course, you can't make everything black – signifying night, because in comics you couldn't see anything. Mm-hmm. So it's blue.
Yeah.
Okay. So instead of being black and white, it's blue and white. But then, while they're outside, it's blue and white to signify night. But then, as they're getting near the statue, it switches to like the whatever, 8-color or 16-color Namor, But she is still in blue and white, and there seems to be cascading bluish energy.
Yeah, it's almost like a like a cylindrical vortex or something.
So, yeah, something like that. And that's the final two panels on this page. Now, on the next page, Namor and the statue that he is now attempting to lift are blue. There is a nimbus of green surrounding everything, and then black for the rest of the panel beyond that nimbus.
Mm-hmm.
So I take that to mean that the statue, and now Namor, that he has is close enough to the statue, is giving off that greenish light.
See, I was kind of wondering about that, because, you know, he's lifting the statue, but the statue is on this huge, what I would think would be like a solid hewn slab of stone that's almost right. as tall as he is.
Right, like a pedestal. Mm-hmm. Like the statue is on a pedestal, and he's lifting all of it.
And so, like, he's bent over, and like this light is starting to form like around him, and then he's like he's got it against his upper body and face, moving it, and like that light, that power is basically like bathing, you know, that part of the pedestal that he's moving. And then as he's finally gotten under it and is about to do basically, it looks like, whatever he wants to with it, it looks as though it's falling off.
Yeah, it looks like it's running down off of the pedestal. And then when he does, he presses it basically over his head. Mm. Well, no, again, I'm sorry, not basically. He presses it over his head. Things kind of revert to the normal coloring.
Yep.
Namor is colored. The coloring of the statue looks like, you know, what a statue could be. And then surrounding the statue is reddish and black, almost like it's being used to show the exertion of, you know, it's finally, you know, up there. He finally did it.
It's an accomplishment flare.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Yeah, you can almost see, like, what, +3 in the color.
Exactly.
So, yeah. So, and then he notices, Namor looks down and notices the statue that has been imprinted on him. And as he's reaching for it, this blue covered hand darts out over his and grabs up the snatches the statue, with Namor exclaiming, "By the beard of Neptune, who?" And the next panel, we see that it is Doctor Strange. The blue Doctor Strange, like we saw on the cover, with this funky energy green nimbus around it.
It almost looks like a flame or a smoke. I don't know.
Or I'm wondering, is that a tear that he has walked through?
Oh, okay. Now, see, I can see that. Yeah.
Could that be? Okay. Because now that I look at it, I mean, the rising up out of the grave kind of looked right on the cover, but that's not how this is drawn here.
Yeah, and his part of his feet are missing, like they're colored over by that flame or mist. So yeah, I can see him like having a portal that he's coming out of, so that he can be there like immediately.
Right. Yeah, he's rent the space continuum in the immediate area, and he's walked from wherever he's been to here.
Mm-hmm.
Coming through the tear. And immediately when he gets the statue, he tells Namor that he is Doctor Strange, which I think that they have met before, but perhaps Namor not with Strange looking like he does now. So Strange immediately turns on the girl and says, "We have to do something about her." And he hits her with the whammy, and she changes into an undying one, and then kind of fades out like he torched her, which is what Namor says, you know, that Strange killed her. So I don't I guess he beat her and she did like the dude did that Namor beat, and just kind of faded out.
Well, actually, it says, but then Holy Masters will destroy me for failing them unless I take my own life.
Oh, yeah, okay. How could... Yeah, okay. So she killed herself, so, as Doctor Strange revealed her.
Yeah, she's failed at her mission. And she looks an awful lot like the beastie that attacked Namor in the den.
Maybe so, yes. That could very well be. Strange tells Namor, you know, Namor is asking him still, you know, what's going on. Strange tells him, well, Ward didn't have a daughter, so that couldn't have been her. Because I knew Ward. He was a friend of mine. So now we get more background about why Strange sent Namor on this mission. But correct me if I'm wrong, Levi, I don't recall Strange ever saying why he didn't do it. Did he?
No, I don't think he did.
Yeah, I don't either. So we find out that Kenneth Ward found this idol, stole this idol, it seems, from somewhere in the Himalayas. Apparently, in taking it, he pissed some people off, went home, called Doctor Strange for help. Before Doctor Strange could get to him and help, he was dead, and the idol was gone. But Doctor Strange surmised that whoever it was didn't take the idol. Ward must have hidden it before they got here.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure what he bases all that on, but that's and that turned out to be the case because we found the idol buried under that statue.
Well,
makes you wonder how Ward got it under that statue that way.
Now, yeah, that is good. That's a good question. But the good doctor does say for I come corridors of countless dimensions, calling upon the powers that dwell therein, until I learned that the idol was somewhere in this area.
Okay, so he just went looking for it,
yeah,
and determined that it was still there somewhere.
Mm-hmm. So okay. However long it took him to look through the dimensions.
And in the next panel, we find out, I'm sorry, why Doctor Strange didn't do it. I suspected this house would be watched by evil entities who would detect a sorcerer in their midst.
Okay, yeah.
So that's why he couldn't do it, because whoever's watching would see that he's in the area, figure out that he's in the area for a reason, and they might find the idol first.
Right, okay.
So he had to send a non-magically powered dupe in his place, and he picked Namor. Yes.
Of all people.
Many more questions there. But like I say, I believe they have met in the past. So, you know, if he wanted a stout ally to go in his dreams and subvert his will, Namor, I guess, would be a good one.
Well, I mean, you know, if you're going to pick someone who is both random and, you know, the enemy is not going to think, oh, he's here for this. Well, okay, pick the guy from the sea.
The Prince of Atlantis would be a good one.
Exactly. So I can see the logic behind that. Though, like I said again, but of all people?
Yeah. So let's see. As he's telling Namor about all this, I noticed the cat kind of skulking around here in one panel. And then he continues to tell Namor the story, fill him in. And a couple panels later, the cat is still in the panel. And Doctor Strange notices the portrait of the woman that Joella, or the Undying One as Joella, said was her grandmother. And in that painting is the cat that is walking around. So it wasn't the female in the portrait that Namor should have noticed. It should have been the cat.
Yep.
Because as soon as they notice, they turn and they see that the cat has, pardon the pun, paws on the statue and is giving them the whammy with some kind of really funky eye beams.
Yeah, no kidding. And the design around the eye is awesome.
And the eyes are red, but still cat's eyes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really freaky looking.
Yeah, it is.
So they're both kind of stunned momentarily. The cat I think, uses the idol in some way to open a portal to where the nameless ones are.
Well, that was the whole point of the idol. It is the key to the doorway to the dimension where the nameless ones live.
Okay, and we didn't the cat though didn't really do anything. I mean, it just like
I think it did like three times.
Oh, okay. Yes. Okay.
Yeah.
And so now we have at least one here in this panel, but then several nameless ones have come through. Namor takes them on as they're coming through the portal so that Doctor Strange is freed up to go after the cat slash nameless one with the idol.
The cat. It's like, you take the beasts, I'll take the cat.
Yeah, it's okay. There you go, Namor. Be the dupe.
Exactly. That's again, right. Again. Yeah,
I will say, in Strange's defense, he does realize that Namor perhaps is feeling a bit weak, kind of peckish there. He needs a recharge. So he douses him with water.
Yep.
Which
he calls forth water and puts him in it.
Yes, which is Namor's one of his. Because he lives in water, the longer he is out of water, the weaker he gets.
Mm-hmm.
But he still may be like superhumanly strong,
right.
But not like mega superhumanly strong. So now that he has been doused in the water, and not just doused, but Doctor Strange like immerses all of them over there in water. So that now Namor is in water,
mm-hmm.
not just moistened. A moistened bint. If you can name that movie, guys, you're doing pretty good. Levi, do you know that movie?
No, but I've got alternatives that are not appropriate for the show.
Swords lobbed by moistened bints?
No.
Is not a basis for a form of government?
No.
Doesn't sound... Okay. And he is continuing to fight the cat now, who is all up on him while he's doing this for Namor. So it's kind of cool that he was able to do both.
The cat grew, just so you know, that it got into, you know,
more like a lion cat. Tiger size
yeah.
cat. Yeah. So now it is fighting Doctor Strange, much more ably. Namor is fighting the nameless ones, but has managed to punch them back into their domain, but in the effort has fallen through into their domain as well.
Yeah, that whole momentum thing seems to have gotten the better of Namor.
Right. So he did defeat them on Earth, but now he's stuck there.
Yep.
So Strange sees that, finally defeats the cat, jumps into the nameless one's dimension, holding the idol
mm-hmm.
to rescue Namor, who Namor is continuing now to fight the nameless ones on their side, even more now that he's in their home dimension.
With no water.
Right. Now he is starting to dry out again.
Mm-hmm.
And he and Doctor Strange, you know, come to the conclusion that, hey, if we get back through and seal it up, we'll be good. And Doctor Strange is like, well, yeah, but in order to do that, one of us will have to hold these guys off so that the other one can get through. And Namor volunteers, but Doctor Strange throws him through kind of with the idol, but probably with his magic, using the idol to seal Namor on our side of the dimensional rift,
mm-hmm.
while Doctor Strange stays on the Undying One's side of the dimensional rift.
And one of the things that I love about it is, you know, Namor's like, ah, you know, basically, he doesn't say it, but, you know, he's like, ah, I see that this decision must be made. And he says, then let the peerless power of Namor oppose the Undying Ones. And I'm just like, either he's really brave or he's really dumb.
Well, he's never been a big fan of being defeated. He's always the one willing to take on the bigger challenge because he must rise to the bigger occasion.
Right. But I would just think that being, you know, one, the monarch of an entire society.
Oh, well, yeah, that he'd have something to live for over here.
Well, I mean, he would be more inclined to being like, all right, well, Doc, you take care of that. I got people to take care of.
Yeah, okay.
You know, instead of, then I shall be the one. You know, I'm going to push you through the hole and you go do whatever you want to do.
Good point.
My people mean nothing. The fight now everything. Yeah. Really, dude? And they want you to rule?
So Namor kind of, just shakes it off there for a minute at the house, the mansion where they were, realizes the situation, and flies across town, diving into the ocean to go back to Atlantis with the thought that if he meets him again, he owes Doctor Strange a debt. Mm-hmm. And like I said, after this issue, apparently the story finalizes or continues a couple months down the road in an issue of The Hulk, which we'll more than likely get to. And so I guess then we'll see if he got out of that dimension or that the Hulk rescues him from there or whatever happens.
Right.
So, and then here, the next issue of Submariner involves the man they call Orca.
I'm just going to wait and see. Because I'm sorry, it's just Orca. I am Orca. Oh, no, dude, no.
Yeah, you may be surprised when you see him.
Okay, all right.
I'll say it is a him.
Okay.
But it is, when you see him, you'll be like, well, yeah, I guess they did the best they can with creating him the way they did with the name Orca.
Okay. All right. Like I said, I'm going to wait.
Yeah.
But so. It's just, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, dude, I can't take you seriously as a bad guy.
Well, wait until you come up against Tiger Shark.
Okay.
But that is another one of Namor's bad guys.
But it's got Tiger and Shark. I mean, it's like, it's Orca. It's a whale.
Right, but well, you know which whale is called Orca, right?
Is that the killer whale?
Yes.
Okay.
So rather than calling him killer whale,
right? They called him Orca.
Yeah. So,
but like I said, I'll wait and see. I mean, I'm interested. I want to see that.
Okay. Yeah. It's not as bad as it could have been, mm-hmm. Given the name.
Yeah.
You know. So yeah, it's not anywhere near as bad as it could have been.
Okay.
Okay, so for this issue of Submariner, a thumbs up or a thumbs down?
I'm going to give it a thumbs up because I dig the undersea superheroes and bad guys.
Okay.
Because, you know, so many are on land or just, you know, other aspects that we are familiar with. So superheroes that can or that do originate from the sea or lakes or are water-based or aqueous, I kind of like a little bit more as long as they're not Silver Surfer-esque.
Right, yeah, right.
And
oh, they kicked me out of my kingdom.
Exactly.
What am I going to do?
Exactly, you know?
Yeah, okay.
I can't stand fish and chip. Okay, dude, I get it. They wrote him well, given the time, in my opinion, and a lot better than they did the other character.
Okay.
So, but also, I really liked seeing Doctor Strange in a costume that I'd never seen before.
Okay, well that's cool.
And so I give it a thumbs up.
Okay, I'll see your thumbs up as well, giving it a thumbs up myself. One of the cooler parts of this story for me has to do with the two characters being together, Doctor Strange and Namor, because they are part of one of the coolest un-teams of all time in Marvel Comics, the Defenders.
Okay.
And the Hulk were the core of the first incarnation, I guess you could say, of the Defenders. And so, in my mind, in reading Doctor Strange and Namor together, I'm like, well, you only need one or two more, and you've got the Defenders.
Mm-hmm.
Which I know is not, you know, what they're going after, but that's the way the fanboy mind works sometimes.
Okay.
Make those connections, even if they're not there, just because you like those connections.
Right.
But I did enjoy the story, and you're right, being in a different realm than on dry land is kind of cool.
I mean, you know, you've got the superheroes that fly, you've got the superheroes that move fast, you've got the superheroes that are really strong, you've got the superheroes that, you know, were mutated from something or somehow or born that way, but they're, 95%, 98% is all basically terrestrial or dry land based,
right? Or not aquatic?
Or yeah, exactly, not aquatic.
So it's like, well, you know, those are really cool powers, but what can you do on the bottom of the Atlantic?
Exactly, it's like, ooh, you can run fast. Can you do that in water?
Yeah. So you right away, you know, you can think of one thing that is a limiting factor to this incredible percentage of the superheroes.
Exactly. And I mean, you know, you've got superheroes that are just you just finely honed specimens of human beings.
Right, right.
But you put them, say, I don't know, long term, a month, a year, underwater, how are they going to have fared?
Right. Yeah.
But you got Namor, and it's, you know, it's like, dude, this is where I came from.
And we didn't see it too much in this one, but a cool thing about the Atlantean civilization, the way that Marvel deals with them, is that they have really, really cool technology.
Yeah, they do. I've seen that in other comics.
Yeah, so they'll have the cool ships, mm-hmm, and the awesome weapons and all this other stuff, and it's like, but they're just underwater. Yeah, but
But it's different.
So something about underwater just spurs this massive scientific outpouring.
And yeah, and I think it's because we as people, we don't live there. You know, it's like, oh, space is like sky, and sky is like flying, and yeah, but underwater, dude, you go too deep, you go too long, you come up too fat, you know, and it's just, it's different. I mean, I don't know, it's different.
It is cool, and it's not used a whole lot, so it's not been overdone yet.
Mm-mm.
You know, at least in my mind, even to today, you know, there really has not been a whole lot of stuff that has been set underwater in underwater kingdoms dealing with, you know, all the potentials of underwater discovery and, mm-hmm, all that kind of stuff.
And, so, you know, just basically it would be a whole different world. Just like,
yeah,
if you go to different planets, if you go to different moons, there are different minerals, there are different this, there's different that.
Right, right.
But they don't do that with our own planet.
Well, maybe the fact is that there is so little known that they don't, although that doesn't make sense. I don't know why they don't.
I don't either. Maybe, I don't know, maybe because they think that people will find it boring because it's like, it's just water.
Oh, that's on Earth?
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's here.
Okay, so there we go. Thumbs up for both Silver Surfer, both thumbs down for Silver Surfer 13.
Yes, sir.
Both thumbs up for Submariner 22.
Yes, sir.
Next episode, we have lined up Thor issue 173.
All right.
And X-Men.
All right, here we go.
X-Men issue 65, which, don't get too excited, because if I recall, 65 and 66... 66 is the last issue until 94 of new material. It goes into reprints from 66 to 94.
At least I get some X-Men somewhere.
So, yes, you'll get two issues, 65 and 66, of some pretty decent X-Men characters here as they're winding down towards this reprint era. A couple really highly touted creators writing and drawing on that also. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, looking forward to that, X-Men. I'm sorry, but I'm...
Say that, but okay.
Since being a kid, and still even then, I didn't have the opportunity to have a lot of comics, but since early childhood, X-Men have been my most favorite team ever.
Okay.
So anytime I can read a comic that I didn't before, I'm cool with that.
Chef Terry and I just went out yesterday and saw the new X-Men movie.
I saw that, and I hate you for it, so shut up.
Well, I mean, normally you see movies before we do because you rent pay-per-views.
Oh, right, but it's not on pay-per-view yet.
No, but have you seen... no, you haven't seen Cap 2
no,
yet, have you?
No, because it's not on yet.
Yeah, we haven't either. I guess we're pretty much caught up not having gone to the theater. We didn't see the new Spider-Man. We didn't see Cap 2. We didn't see Godzilla. We did go and see the X-Men. So you'll probably see those other three movies before we will if you are interested in any of those.
Two of the three I will definitely work to see.
Because we'll wait until the DVD is out and buy the DVD.
Yeah.
So you'll see it at probably a month-ish before we buy the DVD. So,
all right, so... Something else.
Another participation, audience participation here?
Absolutely. What I'm going to do is, again, I'm going to challenge you, the listeners, all right? This time, I'm going to give you a mystery quote. Now, last time we did this show, shall we say season one, it was quotes from comics, but it was from any comics out there. Well, this season... I've refined that because, well, it was brought to my attention that it makes more sense to draw quotes from the comics, or at least the comic company that we're reviewing. So that's what I've done.
Well, not only that, but you kept it in the same era.
I've done that. Definitely this time as well. So here it is. This is the mystery quote, and here's also the challenge. Tell me what character said this quote, and not necessarily the specific comic, but the, how would you say, Ed, the character's comic line?
Yeah, okay. Are you meaning like what, like narrow it down to like what family of comics or?
Well, I mean like let's take Silver Surfer. Okay. Well, this was said by so and so in Silver Surfer blah.
Right.
Okay. So it's said by this person and it was in like this character's comic.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I ideally I want who said it and the comic line, well the comic line.
Right. Yeah. Like you said, if the Silver Surfer, then it was one of Silver Surfer's. It was Galactus.
Right.
In Silver Surfer.
Right.
Said, I'm going to eat your planet.
Right. Exactly. So I want the person who said it, and I want the comic line. All right.
Okay. Can I, and this won't probably happen very, very often, but can I give a hint?
Okay.
This character was in the X-Men movie that Chef Terry and I just saw yesterday.
Ooh, that's a good hint.
I thought that was very amusing when I read that. I was like, hey, weren't they just in? And Chef Terry was like, yeah, they were in.
Yeah.
I was like, oh,
no,
okay,
that's,
cool.
That's a good hint. That's...
Small world kind of stuff there.
All right. So let's see if this doesn't spur some people to try and cross-reference. All right.
Yeah, which narrows it down quickly to, oh, I don't know, 50 or 60. I don't know how many characters were in that movie, but there was a bunch.
Yeah. All right, so here's the quote. But what else can I expect to see after the end of the world?
There you go.
There it is. That is our mystery quote. So give me who said it and in what comic line it was said. If you want to be super studious and tell me like more specifics, that's great. I'm not requiring it, so that's up to you.
Yeah, book and issue number would be cool.
I'm telling you, you'd get mad kudos.
So-and-so said that in such-and-such issue 27.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, whoa. And heck, if somebody does that, you know they're going to sling out, like, page number. And
oh, no, you know they will. And so, you know what? I just might make something special and send it to them if they can give me that level of specifics.
If they get that specific.
Seriously. If it's, like, on page 39, in the fourth middle row center.
Yeah, it's like, dude, okay. You've got the book. That's cool.
Yeah, exactly. You obviously... I don't even know how you found that, but hey, good job.
Yeah, really. Well, I've read that issue so many times that it just sounded familiar.
I know, it's like that was a personal favorite.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad.
I think I might have once upon a time been able to do something like that with the X-Men books up until, I don't know, maybe about 10 years ago from the start up until about 10 years ago because I had read everything, and then I would get in the habit of just rereading stuff periodically. But now I'm into so many different things that I don't do that anymore.
Yeah. Well, there's that, and then there, you know, is the advanced age
issue. Yeah, age related issues. Yeah, I'm sure. And that's age related, not AIDS related.
Or Asian related. It's just age.
Age, right. All right, now for the word of the day submission or quote of the day answers. You can get those to us a variety of ways.
A plethora, even.
We are on Facebook and Google Plus as the Marvel Bronze Age.
Ah, Bronze Age.
Gmail is themarvelbronzeage@gmail.com.
One word before the at.
And the website is bigtimenoise.com/Marvel Bronze Age.
And I believe we're on Twitter as well, correct?
Yes, we are. I did not write that down as, I believe it's the Marvel Bronze Age.
Okay.
I believe it's all the words, not just Marvel. I believe it's the Marvel Bronze Age.
Okay.
So yes, I'm sorry. I forgot that one too.
That's okay.
So,
that's what I'm here for.
Woo-ha.
Woo-ha.
We'll talk to you guys then.
All right. Ciao.
The Marvel Bronze Age podcast is a Teal production, and as such is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, Non-Derivatives 3.0 Unported license. The song Super Freaks is provided and performed by the Hammerheads.